Hey, I'm here, Adam. I'm just getting propped up on my bed like a COVID beached whale.
This is the Punctions Podcast, episode 497. I'm Adam. That's Tom. We're just going to start. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Adam. How you doing?
I don't even know. So I've just started the impromptu start the show because this is the amount of planning that I think either of us have.
Well, everybody knows that the best conversations when it comes to podcasting are before and after you start recording.
Right. So why bother with the before, right?
Exactly. I mean, I might have dispensed with the, you know, telling you how I was setting myself up like a giant beached whale in my bedroom, you know, pillow fortress of solitude.
I know people wouldn't get to know that really important fact about the way that you're living your life in these weird days.
You're a happily married man. I'm sure your wife, you know, like 90% of your house is decorated by your wife, right?
I don't know. I feel like we're a house that isn't decorated so much as it is occupied.
My wife's a big decorator, right? I mean, she's had years to work on it. And she just repainted the bedroom. So she's been home. I've been working mostly. She's been home. So she literally like repainted the whole house and just done a bunch of stuff. But on our bed, in our bedroom, where I am right now, sweating profusely, wearing only a pair of like tennis shorts and a ceiling fan, I have 8 pillows on my bed.
That feels like a lot of pillows.
One for each of us to use to sleep on. And then 3 on each side for decorative purposes. So every night I go to bed and I start chucking. If I go to bed first, which has been the case a lot lately because, you know, I got to get up and nobody else does. They're all running around the house having a party after I go to bed. I just start chucking pillows on her side of the bed.
Okay.
And then on the days I'm home, our rule is whoever gets up first has to make coffee. Whoever sleeps later has to make the bed. That's our kind of unofficial rule, right? On work days, usually the coffee's on a timer and whatnot, but on the weekend. So then we have to pick all those pillows up off the floor and artfully arrange them on the bedding. To me, this is the definition of just futility, right? But it makes her happy, I guess, so I do it. So I'm in my pillow fortress of solitude, sort of propped up on pillows, sweating profusely.
But I mean, it does give you this. It gives you the props to build a weird little mountain when you need one.
It does. It does. That is true. I mean, and if we were younger and more like athletic in our bedroom activities, maybe we could be creative with them. But I think that ship is mostly sailed.
No, I feel that at some point in my life, pillows became something that were further introduced into our lives to thwart me or to get in my way. At one point my wife somehow acquired a pillow that is a giant 90 degree angle. It is like, really? Like a normal pillow,
an L.
Yeah. It's like an L, and no pillowcase can fit it except the one that it came in. So it is never adapted to one of the pillowcases that's actually on our bed. So it's just
either that or like 2 random pillowcases.
Yeah. Well, like no one in our house has the sewing prowess to make that happen. So it hasn't. So we haven't like hacked together a DIY pillowcase for it. So it just has the pillowcase it came in. So it doesn't match anything, but my wife is fond of it. So it's there when she sleeps, but it's just, it's sort of there in the bed to poke at me or to be in my way in all sorts of situations, and I feel that it's there as an act of aggression.
It's literally your like drunk buddy at a party that used to keep you from getting girls.
Yeah, it's like it's just like an arm that's in the bed that doesn't need to be in the bed, but you know, you got to accept these things sometimes. So speaking of things that you have to accept, yes. this is the Punctions Podcast.
497.
497.
We're getting dangerously. Actually, I was just going to say, welcome to the Punk Till I Die podcast, because these are the type of deep conversations you'll get if you tune in with Neil and I. He being a bachelor has a much different lifestyle than I do. You know, my world is dominated by, and I'm fine with it because I don't care. I'm lazy. It's not like I want to decorate things. But yeah, my life is very, I don't know. But what even to say? It's very organized.
Neil does not have the too many pillows problem.
No, but he's got like cool things on his walls because he's a bachelor. You know, he's got skateboard decks and, you know, social distortion posters and Amy Winehouse records and stuff. And I have, you know, pillows all over the place.
You see, I
like
I
have, an epidemic of pillows.
All my cool stuff is stuck in my office. My little, and by office I mean like the there's a room in our basement that I suppose is technically like an extra bedroom if you're a real estate person. But really quickly when we moved into the house, I sort of claimed it as the room where my records and shit will go. And
is that where you're recording from right now?
It's where I'm recording from right now. So I've always recorded from since we've lived here. But it's also become, since we had to kick everyone out of our office, like my workplace, my office. So it's a room that I, in the past like 3 or 4 months, or not 3 or 4 months, like what, 2 months? I don't even know how long I've been in down here. It's just like, how long have we been in this state since like mid-March?
I remember when you, oh, I know you're talking about the lockdown thing. Yeah, I don't know.
So since however long that started, I've been in this room more than I've ever been in this room before, which is strange to me because on the one hand, this is a room that I wish to be in more because it has all my stuff. And it, like, and it has my records. It has, you know, my Adam equivalency of a social distortion poster on the wall, which is in my case like a weaker than's poster. But the right, like, sure. Like my stuff is on the wall, and my things are in the room. My records and all my music is here, and like, and this is a room where everything, like I don't know, like the comic books I've ever owned are stacked in here because like they have no place in our lives otherwise, like that kind of stuff, right? Yeah. And I've now been in here more than I've ever been in here, but at the same point, having been in here to work from home and from having to actually like tried to like faithfully work from home and not just like quote unquote work from home, I feel that like
what a great Canadian you are.
Yeah, well, I mean,
everybody else is half-assing it, and you're.
I'm trying
here.
Not to half-ass. I'm sure I'm not 100% assing it because yeah. I don't well, know if that's necessarily that's, you possible. Know what? Because
I guess if you're getting paid 100%, you're doing 90%, that's still a gain.
Well, right now the government is paying 75% of our wages, so I don't know if that means I have to 100% wait. Yeah,
Which means you'll pay it back in taxes plus a nice surcharge.
Sure, but at the other hand, I need to get laid off, so I guess that's okay, right?
Yeah.
But the I'm sure it's not 100% of ass that's happening down here, but I'd like to think that I'm putting in like a faithful amount of ass, at least as well as could be expected with like two children underfoot. And yeah. So I'm torn because on the one hand, I feel like, hey, I've been in this room more than I've ever been in this room. So in a sense, like I've now more fully lived in this house during the quarantine. Like I've gotten to sit down and like really rifle through records that I've never had to play with. And just like, I don't know, I've breathed the air and like extruded my stink onto the walls. Like I've lived here now. I think more thoroughly than I've lived here before. But on the other hand, it's not like I've gotten to lounge in this room for like a month and a half either. And where like, I haven't just like sat here and stared at the wall for several hours at a time and been like, I need a project. Like I'm going to get a small, cloth, and I'm going to wipe all the baseboards down in here very thoroughly. Like I've not had like these like boredom projects, and I'm envying the boredom projects.
Really? That's a little weird.
I mean, just,
I mean, fingering your records is one thing, but wanting to clean things, I don't know.
I feel that are there people that have been, because I keep seeing articles by things, and these might be sensationalist to me or it's just the way that people are going stir crazy right now or something, but I keep seeing articles that make me feel that like, I'm not getting the full trauma of the isolation because I'm here with my wife and kids and stuff like that. And it's like, you know,
that's pretty traumatic to me.
It's not that traumatic. Like I like them, you know, I mean the kids like 50% of the time, but that's pretty good. And you know, I like my wife like a far more percent of the time than that. So like
55%,
55, right? That's all good. But I keep coming up with things to do that like I feel are like, oh, I'm only doing this because I'm stuck home and can't go anywhere. But then I think about people that like actually are stuck somewhere and my way seems like decadent. So here's the thing. Like I have a smoker, like a charcoal smoker, like one of those like big drums. If anyone at home wants to play along with this, it is a Weber Smoky Mountain. So it's a big.
So you live in Canada, so it'll fit what, like half a moose?
Yeah. So the other day, my mother, who is really bad at quarantine, shows up at my door, and she's like, here, I bought an on sale brisket, cut it in half and take half. So I have this half a beef brisket. So I'm sitting here, I'm like, what do I do with this? And I'm like, well, I mean, like, I can't go anywhere and the weather's nice. And so why don't I attempt to like smoke this thing for 14 hours? Like I'm in Texas.
Hmm.
So I set up all my stuff and I figure out my timing on this, or I figure out the right way to do like a charcoal burn in this that's going to last 14 hours without it all burning out on me. I light the sucker at midnight. It's going in the yard. I'm photographing this brisket and putting it on Instagram as I'm doing things like this, right? I get the temperature right. It's like 225, 230. The brisket goes on. It's midnight. I'm putting this brisket on the smoker, by the way, at midnight, and I am both drunk and high. So I'm
I was gonna say, did you light it from like the butt of your marijuana cigarette?
I had to like light the chimney to light the charcoal, and it was like I was a little bit worried that I'm like, this is not my ideal time in my life to be playing with fire is at that particular, Friday night at midnight is really not the time where I should be like trying to do fire in the dark. But in any case, I get the thing lit. I get the temperature perfect. I get the thing on there. I go to bed. I wake up in the morning, 7 hours later. I have not been waking up with like anxiety to try to find out what's going on with here. And the fucker is like 2:30 when I wake up in the morning, which is perfect.
Oh, perfect.
Perfect. Oh, right. Oh. It's got this beautiful bark.
How does
on the
it even
thing.
Do that? How do it do it? How does it stay perfect for 7 hours?
It's you look up all these weirdos on the internet that are like smoker people, and they tell you what to do. You got to use the minion method.
I don't think I have the will.
Do you know what the minion method is?
Huh?
The minion method is you fill the whole bottom of the smoker with like cold charcoal. You light like a little tiny bit of charcoal in the chimney thing, and you dump it on the top in the middle. And then as it burns down and burns out, it'll slowly light the cold charcoal under it, and it'll just gotta keep it going. It won't get super hot, but it'll last, right? So anyways.
Let me tell you something. I live in the USA. I throw gas on everything.
This is the most USA thing. This is like
just throw matches.
Like, I want like – I was telling my wife. I'm like, I want a hat that says Pit Boss while I'm doing this. And she's like, you aren't fat enough to have a hat that says Pit Boss, and you don't have a pair of overalls, so you're not allowed.
Dude, I'll get you a Keep America Great Again hat.
So I'm doing this whole 14-hour smoke thing, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, yep, this is isolation life, 14-hour smoke. But then I realized that like there's all these like poor bastards that are living in like Toronto or New York or Philly or whatever that are like – living in apartments in a big city, and they don't have a yard with a charcoal smoker in it, right? Like they're inside and they're not going out to these things. I saw an article before we hopped onto here from the big like alt weekly paper in Toronto that was like, oh, we're gonna find the headline for it here. It was like, when are we gonna be allowed to have sex again? And it was like, what is this
really?
About?
Right? Oh, because like if they don't live by you.
Well, that's the thing. It's because like, I never thought about that. Right. It's like if you were back to
high school style. Huh,
yeah. Like if you have a if you have a special friend in your life, but they don't tend to live with you, and you both are actually adhering to the quarantine rules, and you don't live in the same household, then. You know, as far as adhering to the rules,
nobody's
you shouldn't
doing
have been.
That, nobody's adhering to that.
I don't know. But
there's no way a young 20 something. My older daughter she'll be 19 in a few days. And she's not, it's an interesting situation, right? Because she's an adult. She just finished her first year of college and she has been hanging out with her friends. And I won't let you do this. She's an adult. I've said, you know, you need to be careful. You need to be wise, blah, blah, blah. But the truth of the matter is the morbidity rate amongst her age group is so low. It's actually pretty much non-existent. And I understand that that's not the whole story, that you can give it to somebody else and blah, blah, blah. But it would be horrible to be that age and, you know, be locked down.
I know. And I
wouldn't have done at that age. I wouldn't have done it. I just wouldn't have. I'm not doing it now, quite frankly.
I know. I mean, and I don't know.
My larger family's been gay.
I see. We've been pretty good about like preventing my parents from really seeing the kids all that much, which is hard because they're usually the ones.
I imagine. Yeah.
They're the ones that watch the kids, but we're looking at it being like, okay, like we're 30 somethings. We're largely going to be fine. But you boomers are the ones that are going to get sick and die.
I know you're not talking about us boomers. I am definitely Generation X.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about like my parents' boomers, right?
When my kids say okay boomer to me, it makes me want to choke them because my parents are boomers, you know?
So we're trying to drive home to my parents, like, you know, like for your own good, wait this out and don't try to show up and hang around here. I mean, and they do because they bring me a brisket, right? So they're not doing and that. And my dad is, you know, my dad is a mechanic. So from his occupation of here, he's essential service. Like they're allowing them to remain.
Ah, yeah.
Right. But like, you listen to me, some of my brother talk. My brother just had a kid. He had a kid like a month ago and he's really trying to drive home to my parents. Like, can you guys try to be a little bit more safe for the sake of this baby that you are inevitably going to see?
Well, once again, babies have so little risk.
Well, see, that, I mean, that's what I thought. But you know what? They're in full on new parent mode. They've never had a kid. They're super freaking paranoid, right? So my dad, the boomer, will like have someone. They'll bring their car to the shop, and he'll go to do the test drive or drive them home or whatever he's got to do. And he'll just like hop in the car with them. And my brother gets so livid about it because he's just like, why are you not trying to be safe in this situation here? Like,
I think I like your dad's attitude, man. Compliance ain't punk, kids. Compliance ain't punk, I guess.
But so anyway, so all this is going to say, I'm here smoking a brisket for 14 hours and thinking like living the isolation life and it's not too bad. Right. And meanwhile, all these people like are stuck in their apartments and they can't have sex and they're not allowed to go outside and all this other shit that they're dealing with.
I'm sorry, dude. I'm an early 20 something. I'm having sex. I'm just figuring out a way.
I feel that like we're in this period where in 20, 30 years, people are going to reflect upon it in the same way that people like, you know, like our grandparents or whatever would have been like, oh, what was, we'd ask them like, you know, what was life like during the war? And they'd tell you about like, you know, the grocery shortages or whatever was going on if they were on the home front during that time. Right. Like they'd have stories about like what life was like. And someday my kids or my grandkids are going to be like, what was life like during the quarantine? And I'm going to be like, smoked a brisket and, you know, I mail ordered a lot of beer more than I've ever ordered. Right. And I don't know, like I'm not trying to wish hardship onto myself, but I feel like there is some universal experience that I am not experiencing right now.
Well, it's funny because I have a pretty normal size house. You know, a lot of people would consider it small for a family of five, which we are now. So other people would consider it palatial. So it's, you know, it's one of those things. It's perspective, right? But I have a nice outdoors. I have a huge deck, pool, you know, fire pit like that. Nothing super fancy. Don't get me wrong. We don't live in one of these super, super high end neighborhoods. But we live in a nice residential suburban type neighborhood. Modest. And once, you know, we can use our outdoor space, which we were swimming this weekend. I mean, it's pretty good. I can run to the gas station and buy beer. It's not, our lockdown has never been very locked down. And now Michigan is starting to open up very slowly. I think our governor is very confused because we're doing this weird thing where we're still supposed to stay at home for the next 2 weeks, but retail is starting to open back up. I mean, it's a government 6-step program to reopen. Only government could have a 6-step program to reopen, knowing that people can only follow about 3 steps. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Morbidity rates being what they are. I don't know that we did this right, but I don't know. I think right now, if you put a gun to my head and said, we have to do this for another 6 months or you get it, I say inject it. That's where I'm at personally, but you know, I don't know.
You see,
I don't live in a 750 square foot apartment where I can't go outside either. I mean, I get it. I don't have it that bad.
Yeah. And like, I'm not having any particular context for it as an illness, like other than what I've read, which, you know, sure you read things, but you know, we think we're invincible. So we read it and we go, yeah, whatever. I could survive that. I still feel like, yeah, whatever. I could survive that. Like I go further than you where I'm one of those people where they're like, where you read about the, these vaccine trials where they're like, oh, these vaccines are successful in stage one, but we need to test them on like a bazillion people before they're, you know,
forget that.
Truly, I'll take some.
I'd rather get the disease than the vaccine.
No, I mean, I'll take the stage one vaccine that might not work. Like,
no, I'd take the disease first. Well, it's so I've talked to a couple different people that have had it, and I've talked to a lot of people who think they've had it. I'm sure you have too.
Yeah.
And it's always hard to say, right? But I do interviews for other places other than Punk News. Don't tell John. He's very protective. No, he knows. But I was interviewing Chuck Billy, who is the singer for Testament, mm-hmm. a pretty well-known thrash band. And it was an interesting story, and I just happened to catch him at the perfect time. The band had just put out a new album, and they were totally screwed. They couldn't tour. You know, this is a working-class band, more or less, makes their living touring. But they were in Europe. And they got all the way across Europe, and just at the end, they started shutting down, and they were literally like rushing back to the airport to get back to the States before they shut down. And he got it, and his wife, and I think 5 or 7 people on the tour got it. So I talked to him, a half-hour phone interview with him, and it kind of made me feel better about it. I mean, he's probably at least 10 years older than I am, at least mid-50s, probably pushing 60. And it was like, It was, don't get me wrong. It's terrible. I mean, if it doesn't kill you, it's still a terrible thing, right? It's like a 2-week flu that kicks your ass. I mean, it's a horrible 2-week flu that kicks your ass. So it's, you know, I don't relish that, but, I also don't relish my state and my country going bankrupt. And it's not like the big companies I'm worried about. I could care less about Walmart, Amazon, all these companies, but what about the small businessman who literally spent his entire life building up the small business and could lose it over the course of 3 months.
Yeah, I know. And that's the tough part.
It's tragic.
And the weird part of it, I think is just the fact that like, is just the abstract math aspect of it. Whereas like it's unless you're reading like the most like doomiest of commentary about this, the general opinion is that like yeah, unless you are, you know, immunocompromised or
if you're
super
over
old
80,
or something like
if
that.
If you're
like,
over 80, you're getting chemotherapy, it's bad. I'm not like one of these people who's saying, oh, this isn't real, this is a hoax. No, it's real.
I get the math part of it too, where they're saying that like, you know what, in any individual case, you might get this and you will come out fine. The issue is that if you idiots get this at the same time, then all of a sudden the hospitals are overloaded and people that have a real problem are having way more of a real problem.
But that being said, you know, like Detroit's one of the hardest hit areas and they set up field hospitals and they're empty and they're closing them down. So, and then
which in a way means like, maybe you guys did a good job.
That's the argument, right? The people who say, well, the lockdown worked and maybe it did, but we'll never know. And there's other people who say, you know, it was grossly exaggerated. It certainly seems like most of the early projections were grossly exaggerated.
So that's it. I want to kind of spin this back because we should probably talk about some music stuff here. But the
you sure? Man, I was listening to some of the songs and man, I just.
No, we're going to save some of that stuff for John. But just so based on that, so just living the lockdown life here.
Okay. So, not the Vita Loca.
Not. I mean, you might also be doing that. I mean, they're not mutually exclusive.
I mean,
right?
we're going crazy. I mean, I sometimes do feel like that scene from The Shining, where he's just sitting there typing the same sentence over and over. Was it all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy?
You see, that's my problem. Is I don't get that. I'm like, all work is no play is like, oh, I'm going to try smoking sausages this week. And go get some
I always
more
just
charcoal.
Think of the Simpsons version. It was called The Shining. Did you ever see that?
Yes, I did.
And
was it
and
like
Homer
no beer?
It was no beer and no TV make Homer go crazy. And Marge comes in and he says, no, I'm working on a masterpiece novel or something. It's no beer, no TV make Homer something, something. And Marge says, go crazy. And he says, don't mind if I do.
And really like that on our end right now is the extent of our hardship. So like right now we like,
yeah, earlier, my hardship. I'm in season 9 of Simpsons.
Well, earlier today we looked in the fridge and we said, shit, that we, you know, there's only really enough beer in there for Friday night. Like, what are we going to do for the whole weekend? So now we have now this is how much we're suffering. And so we decided that, oh, let's find a brewery that we haven't ordered from yet, and we will go there. And we're like, well, we've done all the local ones, but there's one in Hamilton, which is say like a 45-minute drive out of town that's doing pickup. So we're like, well, we'll get all the kids in the car and we'll drive up there and get some more beer, right? Now, the kids won't be able to get out of the car because, you know, we're not going to let them go intermingle with people and all that shit. But on the other hand, we're still going to go get in the car and go on a needless road trip to buy some beer. So yeah.
It's a boredom buster.
It's a boredom buster, and it's and again, like that's just like I've somehow this happened at a point in my life when we could go on an unnecessary get some beer road trip, and we're not actually suffering that much.
Well, my younger son is a prep tennis player, a pretty good one. So his tennis rackets are pretty expensive, as you can imagine. And he broke a string and he needed a restring on his tennis racket. Well, guess what? You can't get a tennis racket restrung right now. It's not a service that you can get.
That does not seem like an essential service.
No. And I get that, right? And the specialty tennis stores are closed. And they're doing like curbside at some of the sporting goods stores. But when you're talking about $100+ rackets, you don't just pick one out of a catalog, right? You just can't do it. So we, in the spirit of not, respecting the lockdown, 2 hours south of us is the Indiana border, where things are more or less open. Now they're masking and there's some rule, you know, they're not, it doesn't feel like normal. But things are open to a certain extent. So we went down there so that he could put his hands on the tennis rackets. And we ate dine-in.
Ooh.
And it was pretty weird, but it was good. Man, a real good Mexican place, actually. And so, yeah, it's one of those things. Now, Michigan is being phased open. So up north, which is beautiful here, as, you know, I'm sure 20 minutes from your house is, too. You know, they're reopening. So there's bars are open, restaurants are open, 50% capacity. So I don't know. It's so easy to violate, you know, or so easy to not follow the spirit of what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Well, what's really going to start to, become a strain in Ontario right now is as the numbers have kind of gone up and down, what's become apparent is that the problem the problem here was like 75% in long-term care homes, like old people, right? And then with all of those people, and those were the people that were really like most intently like tested and monitored and quarantined and everything like that by the government. So with the long-term care home thing like under control, most of the communal transmission here is within the borders of the city of Toronto. And the rest of the province is comparatively really low. So like Niagara today, like my region where Niagara Falls is and stuff like that. Like, so from like the border in Buffalo, like getting out towards Hamilton, sure. Ontario, right? Today we had zero new cases. Now there's still, that doesn't mean anything. It might be a statistical blip or whatever. Right. But the issue has been is that everyone from these outer regions is starting to push on the government here to say, well, hold on a minute. Can you not just keep Toronto locked down and let the rest of us slowly get things back to business? And what the province has been saying is like, we feel you, but if we open up everywhere but Toronto, then all the people in Toronto are just going to like drive out of Toronto and bring their shit to where you are, and it's not gonna work. Like, it works, it might mentally work, but in practice it's not gonna work. And so you've all kind of gotta keep on this even if there isn't any realistic transmission where you are, because there's no wall. Right, we can't put a bubble, can't put one of those like Simpsons movie dome bubbles around the city of Toronto and let the problem like sort itself out there and the rest of you get back to your lives. So that is becoming I think that's going to be the thing that if this starts stretching further and further into the summer becomes the thing where people start to go really squirrely about, because if there's one thing Canadians love, it's to really bag on Toronto. And it is the kind of thing that I could just really see people starting to like to fuel their resentment, like outside of the fact that there's entirely realistic reasons why it would be higher transmission in Toronto, which is to say that like it's a much denser city
with
a bigger
population, yes.
You know, more international travel comes into there. There's like 500 reasons like that are not anyone's fault.
But they're still allowing national travel. It's insane. It's insane. It's the it's so much a picking and choosing, and some things just can't be scientifically based. They're just, I don't know. You can still fly across the country here, at least. I don't know about Canada.
It depends. Some of the airlines have kind of been canceling stuff, and I don't know. I'm not exactly sure.
I haven't been using any vacation time. I'm literally like sitting. Like, I have vacation time burning a hole in my pocket, and my wife is going insane. She's like, let's go to the Bahamas, or let's go on a cruise, or let's do something in the fall. And I'm like, I want to wait, see what happens. And I don't know that I want to leave the country. I said, maybe we were Vegas or something, or I don't know.
Yeah. See, I would like my ideal right now is like, I would love just to like get in the car and like road trip around to all these like small little towns, that are local, that are in Ontario. Right. And just like do the Tom Trauma thing. We're like, let's go to some antique stores and we'll have like lunch.
Yeah, there you go, man. Right. Look at some records.
Yeah. I'd love to do that right now. And like, I feel that like, that's probably on the safer list because it's still like within the province and we're not international traveling or anything like that. But you know, we're in the situation right now, so we can't really do.
It's amazing how much I miss record stores, and it wasn't like I was going to the record store every week, but like when now that I don't have access to them. So like some of them are doing curbside and stuff, and I know some of them, I think as of today or yesterday, start opening up like real minimal people inside by appointment, which your appointment could be showing up knocking on the door as long as they're not over full, you know.
So let's talk about that a little bit, just to kind of like circle this back to music. Is that like, so your locals, so like your local venues, your local record stores,
venues, yeah,
like,
everything.
Well, like, but like all the, I, yeah, mine is too. But like, have they tried anything? Have they tried to do any? You know,
the venues have been doing. I know a lot of like online fundraisers, live streams, stuff like that to help their staff. So the two biggest record stores in town, the ones that I tend to frequent, the biggest one has shown no signs of reopening, but they do. I know they do quite a bit of discogs. The other one is more of an old school shop, also huge, and they haven't been doing discogs or anything, but they are going to reopen for 10 people or something, which is amazing because this place is like 50,000 square feet. I mean, this place is so big. You think you put 50 people in there, but. So, and they're trying, you know, we got to clean your hands before you go in. Cause obviously fingering through records is a filthy job.
Yeah. At the best of times,
you know, you don't see with your eyes when it comes to record.
I mean, usually I'd be worried about the opposite.
If it's used, like, you got to pull it out of the sleeve and you got to, you know, take a look at it. So anyway,
like this record is going to get someone's basement mold on me.
I might just go over there and just like buy one new record or something. Just to buy something from the stores and just to do it, because so I actually did go to a record store when I was down in Indiana. It was not my favorite record store, but it was felt good to be there. There was no masks. It was only me and like two employees there, if we're being honest. And it was it felt kind of good. I mean, it would have felt really good if it was like a really good record store, but it wasn't. So
my one local store here, which is a Mind Bomb in St. Catharines, like they've been completely closed. They've been doing like, I guess they've been doing some curbside and internet and stuff like that. But I haven't,
the same.
Yeah. Like I haven't taken advantage of any of it yet. And I should. And it's mostly just because like, I don't know, like, cause I haven't been in the mental space where I'd necessarily feel like I'm.
Have you been discogsing or discogsing, or are you just sitting around listening to what you already got?
For the most part, I've been pretty good. Like all of our money right now has been redirected towards beer, as far as I'm concerned. Right?
Yeah, there's been some of that takeout. There's some, but I think we are spending far less in general.
I bet you we are too, especially without like gas and stuff like that, right?
It's easy to go out on a Friday night, drop $150 or something. You know, we don't do that now. So even if we get takeout for $50 on a Friday night, you know.
Yeah. So, but the other local store here that is actually doing something really cool, and I kind of want to give them a shout out here. Is so one of the local stores here is a company called SRC Vinyl. So they have a web store that people would probably be aware of. So SRC, they used to be Shop Radio Cast. It was an punk internet radio station that used to run out of Brampton, Ontario, or something like that, or somewhere outside of Toronto. So those guys moved down to my area, and they started, so from Shop Radio Cast, you got SRC. So they started a online record store. And so they moved to Niagara Falls, where I live. And I didn't know they lived in town with me for like 10 years. But they moved here specifically because they could run the Shop Radio Cast warehouse out of Buffalo and were like right over the border. So so it was
shipping.
Yeah, for shipping, right? So it was easier to kind of do that. So then they went and they opened a cool one of the only cool little record stores that I've ever seen open in Niagara Falls itself. Like there are other we're a bunch of little municipalities that are all smushed into here. So the earlier store I mentioned, Mind Bomb, is technically in St. Catharines, right? So but this but Shop Radio Cast, SRC, they opened the one cool record store that was in Niagara Falls, and then the landlord closed them out for some stupid reason. So they got booted out of there. They moved out a little bit more into like the wine country around where we are and found a place in an industrial park and sort of reopened their shop there. But Danny, and Jenna, the people that run the place, they got really interested in homebrewing as a hobby. And then what that became is that became home distilling. So then they realized that they have this big space so they could have a punk record store in the front of their space, and in the back of their space, they were going to make moonshine. So they bought
moonshine.
I thought you were going to say
beer, and I'm like, man, this sounds like the type of place.
They're going to make hard liquor. But the thing about hard liquor is like you got to age it, right? And you can't. So you at the start when you're opening your distillery, you have sort of no choice but to sell like clear moonshiney products up until the time where you can properly barrel age something. Right. Yeah, yeah. So they opened this place and they were doing like a bunch of like, kind of like weird, experiments and stuff like that with moonshine and stuff. Like you get some really crazy stuff from them. I bought my brother this, like a Mickey of this, like jalapeno moonshine that they had made, where they basically made like they distilled whatever.
Just as smooth coming back up as it's going down.
And then they threw like a whole bunch of jalapenos that are growing in the garden into there. And it went, and then it was like hot as shit and crazy, but it felt like the kind of joke gift that I was going to give my brother. So they had this distillery that was back there, and they realized that like, oh, all this COVID stuff is starting to happen. We have stills. We could just like turn all the dials to 11 here and make hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
So they've been just cranking out hand sanitizer from their distillery, which is called the Limited Distillery. And they've been like just like making tons of sanitizer instead of everything else they were making right now and supplying it to like all sorts of places around here. So that's pretty awesome.
I noticed one or two of our distillers have done that too. And we have this stuff at work, and I swear it just makes me want to walk around with like a cup of like ice and Diet Coke. Cause it smells like vodka the next morning when you wake up and you drank too much vodka. And that's hand sanitizer. I mean, it's like 80 proof, but I don't know. Is there any music you want to talk about, Adam? Did you look about this stuff this week, or should we keep rapping? I really don't care. Like I said, I do a podcast that's like, we sometimes do like 2-hour episodes a week where this is pretty much the whole podcast. So I'm very well versed in just, you know, freeforming. So
we've reformed, and I'm happy to keep doing so. But the thing just dinged.
John's going to be super pissed when he comes on, and we haven't talked about Corkily.
Well, we're going to bring him on because he just rang me. So I was waiting for us to finish that
thought. Now he's going to want to do a full show, and we've pretty much already
we're going to cut him off from doing that. So here we go. We're going to bring in John. Let's see if I can do this. Can we add in John Gentile?
I'm back,
John. You weren't here to guide us. And Adam and I have just literally spent the last like 30 plus minutes just BSing.
Yeah, John. Oh, really? It's been
pillows and lockdown and distilleries and smoking brisket.
Yeah, it's 39 minutes into this recording right now. We have talked about nothing except I don't know.
I listened to all the songs this week. We're not really missing much.
That's bullshit. B, what we've got here is a failure to communicate, and they need to bring in John to enforce some discipline to get this show on the road. We've got
kill our fun, John. Come on, kill our fun.
Okay, so John, you're here.
I was gonna say, dudes, it's been a couple weeks since I've been on, and absence really does make the heart grow fonder. I was looking forward to catching up with you guys, even as I sort of, you know, become less frequent. It's good to catch up. It was, at least until John showed back up and started killing our buzz.
So John, I'm sure the listeners are actually thankful for you being here, because we will stop talking about being suburban dads.
And trust me, Adam, they love to talk about brisket and whiskey. That's what they love to talk about.
Brisket and whisk.
So anyway, so we can talk about some of this stuff right now. I warn you though, Tom and I are very old and very tired, so we do not have a full like nine link amount of stories.
Let's start slash stories.
So John, I'm gonna let you drive. I'm gonna let you pick which of these actual stories about music should we talk about, and perhaps should we break for a song before we do that.
We should, but we're going to do three stories only. We are going to do, we'll let the listeners know, then we'll play a song to keep them on the edge of their seats. We're going to do Jello Biafra recording a new album.
Yeah,
we are going to do Fat Mike putting out a $850 box set. Okay. Which, and we will talk about punk rock bowling. That's not that interesting. Well, punk rock bowling videos and maybe Ian MacKaye. We're going to talk about those items.
That's not three things, John. That's four things.
Well, we'll see what happens on the back end, just like jail.
All right. Tom, do you have a piece of punk rock you want to play for people, or you want me to?
Go ahead. I'll get the next one.
All right. So my one of my favorite artists, Dan Romano, he's been releasing things prolifically throughout the whole quarantine process. Him and his band have put out a record or like a full length or an EP a week since like March 16th or something like that. And I'm talking full, like 10 to 14 song full length, sort of like week on week, new material. Dan has this thing where he will go and he records. He is, I guess, a proven eccentric, but he records like he's working on the line. Like he wakes up in the morning and that is his job. And he goes in there and he's got his home studio kind of built out, and he records anything and everything and puts it all together. And the crazy thing is that like Dan's good. So the stuff that he puts out isn't crap. He's not like bedroom recording a bunch of random stuff. Like he's an amazing songwriter, but he is just putting everyone to shame with the amount of stuff that he's coming out and the stuff he's putting out. And the stuff is like very, like he'll put out a country record one week, and then next week he puts out something that is like a punk rock record. And the next week he's putting out something that's like a Hawkwind psych odyssey or something like that. And John, the other week he put out a 21-minute song that was just like him, just his band, just like psych jamming around. Right. And he's pulling in a lot of the same players and they're all recording remotely. And I don't even know how you do that and make it work, but they know how to do it. So anyways, the one that he put out last week is I think one that's sort of relevant to my purposes here. So he keeps making up band names as he's doing this too. So they made up this band name called Spider Bite. So Spider Bite is Dan and his brother Ian. So I'm pretty sure they're living together right now while they're in quarantine. And his brother drums in most of his bands. Ian was the drummer of Career Suicide on Career Suicide's latest record that came out. So it's Dan and Ian, and then they've got Steve Lamke from the Constantines, who's been basically a kind of like a weathered sounding folk solo artist for the past decade and a half. But they had him come in here and basically like shout a bunch of hardcore lyrics on top of these Spider Bite songs. And Spider Bite sounds kind of like it's, I don't know, it's like channeling 80s hardcore more than anything. And it's super fun. And it's just like the three of them just like screaming and playing loud music. And you compare it to the thing that he released a week before, and the thing he released a week before would have been a country record. And it's crazy. So this is one of the, this is going to be a Spider Bite song. I don't know which right now. I'll figure it out. But you can find the whole Spider Bite LP, which probably is like 10 minutes long, on Bandcamp now, either from Steve Lemke's Bandcamp or from Daniel Romano's Bandcamp. So this is one of the Spider Bite songs that came out last week. Here we go.
Thank you.
We're back. This is the Punk News Podcast. We're 40 minutes in. We haven't talked about news. We've talked about brisket. John, what are we talking about?
We're talking about the main man. We're talking about the reigning champ. We're talking about the guy that I would argue, perhaps tied with Keith Morris, is one of the only first wave punk rockers, or almost first wave punk rockers, to really maintain an excellent discography throughout the decades and have never really went whack, have always been off. Jello Biafra. He's recording a new Jello Biafra and the Guantanamo School of Medicine album. It's being recorded now. The title is not really timely. They've recorded at least 7 songs so far, and the title is Tea Party Revenge Porn, which is very much a Jello Biafra title. I'm not sure it's real timely. You know what I mean?
2000.
Yeah, I know. But that being said, a lot of people, myself included, kind of assumed that Jello Biafra from the Guantanamo School of Medicine was over because they haven't put anything out since 2013. Maybe they might have put out like a digital thing in 2014, but it's been a while. And they've
done.
They were
still playing live at least up to a couple of years ago.
Until about 4 or 5 years ago. So no.
I saw them 2 years ago at the bowling.
That was the only show they did all that entire year.
Okay, the camping Drunken Public thing. I saw them in 18.
So. Between like 2017 and 2020, maybe they did 6 shows total, you know. Okay. And so people kind of assume that it was over. Then out of the blue, Jello announces that he's back and he's coming out with a new album. I'm very excited. I think Jello's discography throughout the decades has been great. I think Guantanamo School of Medicine is his second best non-Dead Kennedys band following Jello and the Melvins. And that's saying something because he's had like 5 bands essentially. I think the title's not that great. I think Jello used to be kind of the master of like not anchoring himself down to a time frame, but now he is for some reason. That being said, that's a very minor quibble. The last album, the music was awesome. Jello sounded great. The only thing I would say is all the songs are like 4 minutes long. If he could just break his song from 4 minutes into 2 minutes, he could even keep the lyrics and just put them on a different song. I think he could have another off-level album. You know, I just think the songs were a little long on some of the Guantanamo stuff.
Well, that's the band, you know, the different band. They're a little different sounding, but yeah, it'd be cool.
I'm not saying it sounds like off. I'm saying.
No. I mean, Guantanamo School of Medicine, every one of Jello's bands are slightly different.
Yeah.
And they're just a little more. I mean, they're a punk band. Don't get me wrong, but there's some heavily, I don't know, grunge influence or something.
Right.
A little more structured songs, right? Something. Don't you think?
It's almost like thrash. The song was like thrash.
Thrash. Okay. Well, still, my point being, it's not really the band has never really sounded like the Dead Kennedys or something. It's heavier.
But I think you just cut the songs in half. The songs would be amazing. Like they've got some short songs, like "Barack Sorrow Bummer," which was kind of funny. I thought that song was like really good. Or "A Dillinger" is like really good. Those are all the shorter songs. I don't think the songs need to be 4 or 5 minutes long. I think 2 minutes.
I agree. Bang.
I wonder if Jello regrets – he probably doesn't, but like, you know, beating up Obama very, very badly, which not that I disagree with that necessarily, but a lot of that beating did kind of pave the way for what we have now too. You know what I mean?
Well, it's funny you say that, John, because when I did see him at the punk rock camping thing, he took credit for getting Obama elected, which I thought was interesting. He's become much more mainstream in his politics, I think. I'm not impressed.
I mean, you say that, but how?
Well, for one thing, supporting an establishment candidate. Listen, Obama was not the worst president in the world, but he wasn't great either. He essentially committed most of the same sins as every other president, including bombing the shit out of everybody and being utterly untransparent about just about everything he did. Now, in the era of Trump, it's easy to lionize him, but the truth of the matter is he was a bum too. But I mean, the kids now sort of worship at Obama's feet, but his record does not justify that.
I don't know if I would characterize Biafra somewhat changing his stances as becoming more mainstream.
Well, come on, dude. Endorsing an establishment candidate is mainstream. Punk rock politics have become mainstream in general.
He's always endorsed the Green in every he's always endorsed the Green Party. He didn't endorse Obama.
I'm telling you, John, he took some credit for a punk rock voter and specifically mentioned getting Obama elected.
But he also wrote a song directly criticizing Obama.
Well, I get it. I mean, listen, he's a complicated man. I get it. I'm just saying, man. I do feel like his politics have gotten more mainstream.
Well, see, I don't want to blame Jell-O necessarily for this because I think like all of the big like political punk acts have sort of had to dance this dance just because Trump is such like an abhorrent maniac with the way that he acts, right? Where it was like it was so much cleaner being like an angry leftist when we could go and we could say we could make those arguments where we say like, you know what, they're both bums, but we'll hold our nose and deal with the one that is less of a bum. And then as soon as we get that one, we're like, okay, but let's expose all of that person's secret sins. Right. Whereas, and you see like Propagandhi would do that kind of thing a lot. And they're the one I want to bring up in this example where like Propagandhi was like, of course, vehemently anti Bush, but Propagandhi was also talking shit about, you know, both of the Clintons because they were, you know, really Propagandhi's like ethos was like, is like they were against this, this you know, military industrial complex, right? Against like the whole like neoliberal end of things. Like they were anti-corporatist really more than they were necessarily, you know, left or right from a Democrat or Republican standpoint, right? So you would have, you know, Propagandhi had a t-shirt, I remember, that they released when I think it was like before the election or something like that, where like there was like some snake and one of the snake's heads was Hillary's head and one of the snake's heads was George W. Bush's head, or like it was just like they're, you know, really, really playing this like, sure, like they're all monsters thing, right? Which mm-hmm. is what Tom was just sort of getting at, which I don't even necessarily disagree with. But then you're in a time where you have someone like Trump in the White House and it's just like you can't help but all of a sudden like feeling fond for like anyone that can just like keep their pants on. And like, I felt that too, where like, I was like the most anti George W. Bush person that you could be, but you know, you look back at that time now and you think that like, wow, like at least that guy was, he kind of seemed like a president, even though I disagreed with everything he said. Right?
And that's the truth of the matter is the right demonized Clinton when he was president, the left demonized Bush. There's always a high degree of hyperbole, even with Trump.
So there was
I've said it before. I'm no fan of the man. I don't think he's a particularly good president. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at actual policies rather than the crap that spews out of his mouth, the differences are minimal.
Well, no, but I think that's the thing is that we're all just looking for like, man, couldn't we have someone that we like could agree or disagree with, but
was like slightly humble crap. And actually it was actually like humble and, you know, seemed to be, you know, yeah. I strongly dislike the guy, don't get me wrong, but I think what people don't understand, especially now in this COVID time, either because I live in a pretty conservative area, but the truth of the matter is it's like this: everybody either thinks Trump is doing a great job and the governor's doing a horrible job, or they think that the governor's doing a great job and that Trump's doing a horrible job. And I just want to say, you know, it's possible to hate them both. Don't sell yourself. Don't sell yourself short. The fact of the matter is they're cut. Most of them are cut from the same cloth.
That is true. Most politicians are I've said this before. My last job, I dealt with a lot of politicians. Most of them are pretty slimy.
You can't have the ambitions to be a public figure without being an egomaniac, right?
True.
But on Propagandhi's note, like they tweeted something the other day, and I just pulled it up here. I think Chris writes their tweets. He said, "I don't want to spread false hope, but Trump seems genuinely worried that the majority of voters will choose the other idiot, right?" And in a way that, like, you know, there's.
I don't think he has the capacity to worry. I don't think he does.
Well, no, but like, but just reading that tweet, like, you know, even though there's some snarkiness in there, you know, the other idiot, you do get the impression that, like, you know, Propagandhi, who are like, would famously be like, both sides can burn in hell, you know, are like, even one of them is looking at this and going like, Can we at least deal with the other idiot? Like, that's our clear preference. So I don't fault Jell-O for maybe coming off a little bit on that side too, because like, you know, I'd rather, I mean, from a, I don't know, you want to put these guys in like a Dungeons and Dragons scale, like I'd much rather deal with the person that's like lawful evil than chaotic evil. And evil is exhausting.
Listen, I will set both my right and left friends at ease here. To my left friends, I think there's a reasonable chance that somebody with D in a bracket next to their name will be president after November. To my right-wing friends, I will say, it looks like that person will change policy so little that you won't even notice. So that's my what I will say to both my lefty and righty friends.
Well, welcome back to the McLaughlin group where we discuss policy. Exactly. But anyway, Jello, he's the man. Can we all agree that Jello's the freaking man? I mean,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, Jello's the man. I got no issues with Jello. I like to listen to him talk even when I think he's full of shit.
You could disagree with him. You could pick out flaws here and there, but you compare Jello to most other quote famous or semi-famous punk rockers that have existed through the decades. Jello, on both an artistic and a personal level, Jello comes out pretty close to the top. I mean, he's the man.
Jello's cool, man. It's like that movie Sling Blade. Like, you just like listen to him talk.
I just watched that movie a month ago. That movie is a good movie.
I don't like them Republican politicians.
Speaking of someone that you could say is another punk rocker that is living life by his own rules, or you could say this guy is a total opposite of punk.
Thank you, John. Nice introduction. Sorry.
Fat Mike is putting out a box set. I would say it's a very interesting artistic piece. It's a 50 set, 7-inch vinyl collection. 104 songs, and it comes – well, there's various editions, but the most expensive editions come in a miniature dumpster, which I think is very funny. Mm-hmm. And there's songs from his Home Street Home musical, which I doubt has 104 songs. So it's probably like those songs and some other songs and stuff. So it's not really a NOFX release, although there are some NOFX records in the collection. It's really a Fat Mike project, Fat Mike as a producer. What's been challenging for some readers is the most expensive version clocks at over $1,000 after taxes and shipping. The cheapest, and that's the gold dumpster. The silver dumpster, I think, is like $750 or $800. And then I think there's another dumpster that's like $450. Then if you don't want the dumpsters, you just want the records, the cheapest physical is $250, and you get 57-inch records.
That's not even really a good price for 50 package 7-inch records when you're buying in that quantity.
And I think you either get 10 records at a time or 5 records at a time over the year. So as an artistic piece, as format, I think it's exceptional and really interesting. And
what if you get the whole dumpster, John, but then you run out of money and you only get like a quarter of your dumpster full?
I'm just saying, as an artistic piece, format-wise, it's very interesting. That being said,
it is. That would be sweet. I would love to have a dumpster full of records. As a matter of fact, I probably will after I'm dead when my kids roll the dumpster up to the driveway. But
the counterattack is 105 song, 104 songs. You could fit them on three $12 CDs. You know.
Yeah. The other issue is this really speaks more to the audience that he has at this point than it does him, right? The fact that there's an audience for a $1,000 7-inch box set.
Yes, I mean, that's a lot.
When did the fat become so fat, like he once sang? Man,
you can
just crazy, right?
The amazing thing is that you can just buy the dumpster if you don't want the music.
Oh, you can?
For that kind of money, I would just go buy like one of those giant like roll-out trash cans and put my records in there.
I'm not sure what I think about this.
I was thinking, you know, the Rancid one years ago came with like
that was just a dumb
little
box
baseball bats, right?
That box set was so dumb, though. It was, first of all, it was called The Essentials, and it was every album. So they're saying every album is essential, which I guess is amazing. But what it was, it just took LPs and broke them down into a series of 7 inches, which is stupid.
Which is insane. Yes,
I would argue that 1% of those records actually got listened to. You know what I mean?
It was probably bought more as a collection / investment. Listen, if you're a Rancid super fan, that's awesome. Go ahead and buy it. But you know, my point was going to be that they came with those little baseball bats. So this $1,000 thing, I was thinking maybe it came with like a chainsaw or something.
I'd rather have a dumpster than a baseball. I think a dumpster is much funnier than a baseball bat.
A chainsaw would be better than both.
A dumpster is funny for like the 20 minutes that you get it. And then it's just an ugly ottoman that is in your house forever.
And you have to put it somewhere. Yeah, exactly. Ugh.
I disagree. I've got a
Danzig. Adam, my wife would probably put pillows on top.
I've got a Danzig urn that has Death Red Sabbath inside on my shelf. And I think it looks awesome. I've had it for like 2 or 3 years. I think it looks freaking awesome.
It's so great. It's got Danzig and Grandpa.
Guess how much that cost compared to this?
$200.
$60.
Really?
Yeah.
So wow. If you just
take more advice from Jerry only.
If you just want the dumpster, Just the dumpster is $250 for just the dumpster.
And okay.
Wow. Was that just the records, Adam? Is that just the records or was that just the dumpster?
That's just the dumpster. You don't get any records.
Well, so does it only hold 57 inch? Because if so, it's not very big, right? Because those, like, I use those corrugated boxes for my 7 inches, and I think they fit 150 each. Have over, you know what I'm talking about? Those, like, corrugated 7 inch boxes?
Yeah, I don't think the point of this is functionality. I think the point of this is art and cash.
But still, $250 for a box that holds 57 inches?
I'm not saying it's good value. I'm saying it's not a good value. I'm saying as an art to remove from the price tag, it's very cool.
It's fun. I agree, John. I'm not disagreeing with that. I just, the price point is offensive.
I agree. I mean,
I've said it before and I'll say it again. I am a capitalist, not a crony capitalist. I'm a capitalist. If people want to buy it, fine, but there's no freaking way. I've done okay in my life over the last couple of years, but my wife would skin me alive if I bought this.
Okay, plus, there's an interesting fact here that we have not mentioned, and I think that the
costs $300 to ship it to Canada.
I won't fucking order a LP to Canada because it'll cost me $15-$20 to ship it. I'm not ordering a fucking $300 dumpster. It's going to just like the customs have a heyday with that. The thing that is crazy is that this dumpster is not that big. It's 9.5 inches long by 13 inches wide by 9.5 inches high.
That's kind of big. I mean, that's probably bigger than you might think it is.
9.5 inches. I mean, it's less than a sheet of paper. No, it's.
It ain't that big.
A sheet of paper is 10 by 12, right?
A sheet of printer paper is eight and a half by 11 inches.
Okay, so it's a little bigger than that as far as its footprint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you could stick it on a shelf if you want.
Yeah, sure.
Here I think is kind of the main consideration with this. It's very interesting, but is this art following form or form following art? And I think it's art following form in that would there be the fact that it's 57 inch records, is that an artistic statement in of itself, or would just one dumpster with like three records make the same comment? And it would, and it'd be a lot less expensive.
It'd be a fun thing to have, like a tote for, like, if you go over to a friend's house and you want to bring some records. Like, nobody does that anymore. I get that. I mean, we're not even supposed to leave our houses, whatever, but I think it would be fun to have as a box to keep some 7 inches in. But it seems like it's a piece of injection molded plastic made in China. It's probably, you know, $30 is probably a 200% markup.
Why do you think it's 57 inch records? Like, why do we need that? You know, like, why?
Well, it shows a devotion, he's releasing them over time, right? Like, it's, you don't get all 50 at once. It's a club, right? So you get some
five. One.
Five. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I get the appeal of that. I get the appeal of trying to mimic one of these singles clubs, because those are, you know, whenever you hear about like the Sub Pop club, or even like into the emo record, there was the emo era. There was like didn't Jade Tree early on have kind of like a singles club or something like that, or was it Tree Records? One of those.
Third Man's got something similar to that. As does is it Polyvinyl? One of the other ones.
So, like, I get the appeal of being involved in that kind of thing, and it's kind of cool to get something like rare and exclusive in the mail that you've committed to kind of getting over time. I get all that. Like, that seems fine to me. I guess what I'm really hung up on, and I feel like I've just not answered your question here, but what I'm really hung up on is Home Street Home enough of a thing that they can sell merchandise that has this kind of price point on it?
Well, it was a single album, right? What did it have, like 20 songs?
I think Fat Mike is, though. No
Effects is, right? And by extension, I guess Fat Mike is. But is Home Street Home? Because I'm just like, going on nothing, the Home Street Home Facebook page has 78 likes. The Home Street Home Twitter account has 17 followers and has never tweeted, right? Like, maybe they've made all of this stuff recently and they're just starting to promote it. The Home Street Home Instagram account has 632 followers, which is not really all that many when you look at like media properties, right? The you know, things that aren't individuals. So like, is it, I'm just, I wonder,
18 songs on the original record.
I don't even think I've heard the damn thing. Like, but that's what I'm wondering. This is not me criticizing. This is me asking, like, did I miss the boat on something here? Like, is this enough of like a big major punk rock phenomenon that I should have included in more?
I will say it does seem wrong to me that music items, which are not essential, have payment plans. You know, like, I think if any music item has a payment plan, something's wrong, you know? And it's not because I'm banging. I mean, I said the same thing about the Guar box set, which had a payment plan. That just seems wrong, you know? I mean, but then again, no one's buying music, so what do you want them to do, I guess?
I have a payment plan on my actual, like, trash that comes in, you know, once a week. And
but how about this? Dumpster. I mean, Melvins sell albums for $50 to $60 now,
yep.
but those are also screen printed and hand-drawn. Yep.
So I see those weird splits, like this helmet split goes for like $45. Yeah, 7 inch.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess people are trying to figure out what to do. I think it's just too expensive. I think it's interesting art. I think the Melvins one is priced just right, but maybe that's because I'm a fan. But on the other hand, this is a mass-produced item, whereas each Melvins item is hand art. You know, so that's different.
Well, and you know, the fact of the matter is, you look at the Melvins. So there are people, and you might be one of these people, who that's their band. And they collect everything they put out. And I know that NoFX is that band for some people, but I don't know that Fat Mike is that person for anybody. You know what I mean? NoFX has put out a ton of 7 inches. I mean, they probably put out 100 things.
To that argument, NoFX, like the limited stuff, usually sells out in like 5 minutes.
Yep.
None of the items here are sold out.
Well, I mean, their average fan might be 38, but they don't have that much money.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying is maybe it's going to backfire.
I don't know.
I mean, if they maybe it's low risk because they're right now.
Not going to make more than they need.
Well, yeah. Like they paid for a website right now. So that's about it. So if it turns out that they only move a certain number of dumpsters, then they can only make a certain number of dumpsters. they're not going to have, you know, they're not going to have 10,000 of these sitting in a warehouse.
Like
Mike's in California,
San Francisco home, like his garage is full of all these tiny little dumpsters.
Well, actually, I'm going to slightly disagree with Adam, and here's why. The first shipment is late July 2020. The dumpsters come with the first shipment. So you can argue that, well, the dumpsters are already made because that'd be a very difficult timeline if they haven't been ordered yet. However, the dumpsters themselves are probably very cheap to make. So I think there's only like 1,000 dumpsters. So say they cost NoFX like, I don't know, $20 each, probably not even that. Okay. Then for that much money, NoFX isn't out that much. You know what I mean? But if they sell everything, they're making over $200,000.
Hmm. I mean, I won't argue with the math or anything. I just don't know who cares that much about Home Street Home.
Yeah, but yeah, not me. But anyways, but here's the point. Do we commend Mike for doing an interesting artistic thing, or do we condemn him for gouging people way too much money for inconsequential items and using and abusing goodwill?
I will vote by not buying it. Anybody else can do whatever they want.
Yeah, I'm down with that as the answer. I mean, if someone wants this, you know, and you can afford it, then I'm not judging you for buying it. I'm not gonna get all up on my high horse and say that there's other things you should be doing with your money, because you know what, as Tom and I discussed before John gets here, I've spent, you know, that much money on like beer and meat since we've been stuck at home. So whatever.
Adam has spent more on beer in 2020 than the GDP of several small countries around the Philippines.
Well, let's talk about the opposite guy, Ian MacKay. He's given a hard date for the release of Kariki. Kariki is his new band with Amir Farina and Joe Lally. I think it's Joe Lally, isn't it? Joe Lally. And the hard date, the album is going to be out in June. And not only is the album going to be out in June, they've released a new track. It's called Too Many Husbands. It's somewhat in line with the other Kariki release in that, quote, angular. It's fairly energetic. It's electric, but it's not like a spaz out, freak out, like some Fugazi stuff. Do you guys agree with the Ian MacKay position where he's only charging like $15 for this record? But on the other hand, Maybe Ian can because he's got enough money. On the other hand, his Fat Mike probably has more money than Ian, doesn't he? So maybe Ian's doing the right thing. What do you guys think?
Or I think Ian does okay on that back catalog still.
Is it not a competition?
Well, it's not a competition. I don't think their business models were ever the same. I will say,
Dude Fat Records credit is – and Discord. I don't think I've ever heard of anybody in Discord or Fat be upset about their deal after the deal is over. So you have to
– You know what I must say about Fat too? Because I do – they still put out a couple things a year I still enjoy. Their records are not expensive. The black vinyl variants are usually $12 or $13. So that is not, you know, to order directly from them. So they're not gouging as far as that. CDs, I think, are $8 or $10, $10, I think. So, they're not, you know, it's not like they're charging $24 for a record.
Hey, here's something, not to beat you into the ground, but is Home Street Home out on Fat or is it something else?
No, it looked like an 18-track record on Fat.
Oh, it is on Fat? No, not the old one. I'm saying the dumpster. Is that technically out on Fat? I mean, you buy it not on Fat Record, you know.
Where do you buy it from?
Their own website.
With the Fat Mike's website?
HomeStreetHome.com.
Huh. I have no idea, John.
That's very interesting, isn't it?
These are things that I don't know about.
Copyright 2020, Home Street Home, not Fat Record. That's very interesting.
There's potentially some reasons for that outside of the Fat thing. I mean, like
can we all think of those reasons?
No, I mean, like there might be a business reason, like because like that was a musical, so like the lyrics weren't all written by Mike. He had a co-writer that was on it. You know, it had someone that did the book. It had a director, right? So like there's other principles that are involved outside of just Mike when it comes to that as a business venture. So you know, there might be a reason.
Well, it also could be an asset protection plan as well.
Yeah, or that. Mm-hmm. Going back to, I don't think you can compare what Discord and what Ian is doing with Mike here. They seem like there's sort of like an apples and oranges thing. I mean, like Ian's keeping on with the way that he's always released stuff, and this is going to kind of come out with the same sort of price point as anything else that Discord's
once again very reasonable. I mean, you know.
Also very reasonable. No dumpster. I think that like price is maybe not what you want to compare them on, but like I think the one thing to really compare it on is the amount of like. And this is, I think, maybe the more interesting comparison in my mind is the amount of bluster that goes with it. So this Corky album is
how can we agree on how to say this? Because I really don't know how to. Ricky,
I thought there was an L in there.
I was calling it
Corkily.
It's yeah. I made the really bad like Corky and the Juice Pigs joke last time, and I think Tom went.
Am I the only one who sees this name, and all I can think about is the special guy from Life Goes On. Wasn't he Corkily? Corky?
he was Corky. I think of Paul Hogan. Crikey.
What was the name of the Australian? What was the marionette from that? Was it a marionette? No, it was a from Trailer Park Boys, the ventriloquist dummy. What was the name?
I've never seen that show.
Oh God,
me neither.
You haven't seen Trailer Park
Boys? I mean, we're trying to go high culture here with Crocodile Dundee, and you're going Trailer Park Boys, Adam? Really?
Conky was the name of the puppet that Bubbles had in Trailer Park Boys. Right. Anyways, okay. Yeah, it's okay. So Ian, I Love You is a stupid name. But you look at this, and you know that this is coming out. So a new record from members of Fugazi, right, is going to be a big deal in music circles. And it is the kind of thing that
small music
circles, right? But it's the kind of thing that Discord would not have been, they would not have been faulted were they to have made a big deal out of that release, right? Because it's, you know, it's their main people. It's probably something that's going to sell well, right? If this was Epitaph, if this was Fat, if this was any of these other labels, you know, you would have seen the big flashy micro site that's out there promoting it. You'd see like, you know, tons of media and videos and social campaigns and all kinds of crazy stuff, including, you know, specialty painted dumpsters and things like that, right? Like you would see all kinds of crazy promotion because the album will sell. But you look at this and, you know, it's coming out on like regular black vinyl that you can buy for $15. It's coming out on a CD that you could get for $10. It's promoted in kind of like a very modest, normal ass way, as far as, you know, as far as records go. It's not really being, it's not being promoted in any way that's more prominent than anything else that Discord has put out. Like if you go to Discord's website, like it's Discord release 190. It's just a little release that's in the sidebar there. It's next to, you know, records by Jay Robbins and Government Issue and, you know, Shutter to Think and stuff like that. Like they haven't gone and done like a full media blowout takeover of all of their stuff to really drive this into the ground. They're not going hard at it from a promotional standpoint. It's almost like Discord at some point figured out that like this is the Discord formula for promoting a record, and it's not loud and in your face and flashy, and maybe it's less effective than the competition, but it feels honest, and this is what we're going to do. And they're not treating this record.
I would argue that it's almost dishonest. You know what I mean? Like because you know what, Ian and Fugazi, they're not equal to the other bands on Discord, and that they are more well known. You know, a lot of people hold them as very special. So almost, and I'm not dissing on Ian, I like Ian, but is it false modesty? You know, is he doing his band a disjustice or injustice? Is he doing Discord an injustice by not saying, you know, the champs are back to kick some ass?
No, because that's not their vibe. That's the John Gentile vibe.
but here's my counterattack to that is Ian and Jello are sort of polar opposite in that Jello is somewhat not precious. Well, actually, he is precious, but Jello's willing to take risks when he does music. Sometimes it's awesome. Sometimes it's not so awesome. By contrast with Ian, everything is very carefully considered. Everything is measured. The problem is when you're very carefully considered, when you're measured, sometimes you don't stumble onto greatness and everything you put out is good, but expect it, you know? And to a degree, this is good and expect it, but it's not, oh my God, I can't believe what this is. Even look at the cover. Like the cover is just the name of the band and somewhat abstract art design. So it doesn't really say anything. You know, you could say, well, it says what you wanted to say, which is fine. But they're arguably, and I'm not saying they are, but arguably they're being so safe in their choices that sometimes you have to be unsafe to make great art in your choices.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, the
and I'm not dissing on Ian. I like Ian.
Here's where I kind of like need to talk out of both sides of my mouth here. Were this just some band that emerged from the ether, then I'd be more on your end of it there, where I would be saying that like if you got something cool here and you want the world to know about it, like you got to get out there and you got to let them know about it, and just, you know, not having so much of a band photo out there and just being, you know, just being your logo, which is kind of boring. Like, you know, you need some help to get this thing promoted. And I expect if you were to take this record and, you know, to take the quote unquote celebrities out of it and just give it to any publicist, they'd probably come back to you with a whole laundry list of things they're doing wrong. Right. So I think that you're right from that standpoint, but this being an Ian record and a Discord record and having that history behind them, I like Ian's sort of like stubborn modesty is sort of like, it's sort of his thing. Like he's got to ride that. He can't come out like, you know, he can't just like walk up and down the streets of DC, you know, firing a shotgun into the air, screaming about this record, because that's just not the way it works.
But I always find it frustrating in that, if you don't think it's special, why should I think it's special? You know? And I think he does think it's special. I think he's scared to blow his own horn. But in a way, I read that almost as not modesty, but almost as cowardice, in that, well, if I just put it out there and don't tell anybody, then no one is going to think it's terrible. People think that this is another solid release. But if I put myself out there on the limb, then I am risking fail. That's what I just hit on it. I feel as though I don't this is something I'm considering. And actually, I'm probably going to buy this record because I haven't loved what I've heard so far, but I've liked what I've heard so far. And honestly, like anybody, I want Ian to put out another cool record because I like Ian's stuff. But by being so careful, he's planning to fail safe in that no one's going to say it's terrible. No one's going to be like, this is, I can't believe you did such a crappy record. Everyone's going to be like, yeah, man, this is another solid Ian record. This is Ian. He never lets us down. He delivers what we expect him to deliver. Whereas another counterexample, Keith Morris came out with Off. When he came out with Off, he's like, this is Off. Off is great. I hate the Circle Jerks now. They suck. Off is the greatest. And, you know, everyone's like, you know what, Keith? Off is the greatest. Now, Keith could have come out and stumbled and it could have been bad. And everyone would have been like, Keith, what are you talking about? You made a huge mistake leaving the Circle Jerks. This is terrible. But he risked it and he slammed it home. Whereas if he was more quiet and if it had come out on Epitaph, maybe Off wouldn't have been as special as many people as it was. I'm just
all roads lead back to Off.
They do.
I mean, you've only been with us for half our conversation. You've already brought up Off twice.
Because I'm frustrated because I think Off is over. And they're so great. I still listen to Off.
If there's anything we should have learned from Keith Morris at this point, it's that it's not over till it's over. Nothing is over.
That's true. Especially with Keith.
Yes. I mean, the guy's got to make a living. Whatever. I don't begrudge him. Whatever.
Listen, if Keith started selling Nikes tomorrow, I still don't think I'd fault him because of all the great things he's done. But yeah. Ian, actually, here's a question: what if Ian started selling Nikes tomorrow? What would that? Well, that would be different, wouldn't it?
The only thing that
is that still
Keith
here?
Morris could. The only thing that Keith Morris could do at this point that would make anybody lose respect for him is reunite with Greg Ginn.
Oh, I think people would like that.
I know. I'm just kidding. I would.
Adam, are you still here?
Oh, I'm still here. I'm just listening to you rant and rave.
It's so hot. I'm so hot up here.
Adam, have I been too hard on Ian? Because I like Ian. I think he's a great artist.
I think that you have an interesting observation on Ian. I don't think it is necessarily an actionable one if you are Ian. I guess.
John doesn't see inside his head. He's just sort of pontificating, you know, at the end of the day.
And you're saying you don't think Ian should react to my question to Ian is, Ian, why aren't you acting as Black Dahlia with acting situation?
You've essentially called him out to the street at high noon. We'll see if he responds.
Well, listen, I'll
put it into this standpoint. There are certain people that while I feel that I know them reasonably well, and they're mostly people that I know online, they tend to carry themselves with like a certain amount of poise and dignity and like projected wisdom that whenever I'm around them in person, I feel like a 12-year-old.
There's
a handful of artists that are like that, but like even like Aubin, the guy that owns Punk News, when the few times I've been around there with him in person, I feel like. I mean, he's a little bit older than me, so he's got that going for him. But just like I'll meet him, and I'm always just like, oh, like I'm a weird, awkward child man, and you're an actual like together adult that.
He probably feels the same way about you, Adam. That's the way life works.
Well, no,
everybody looks at everybody else like they got it together.
Oh, sure, but there are certain people that sort of like project adultness to me, where I should probably like not try to like inject my dumb goofy opinion onto what they're doing. And I feel that if I were to go sit down with Ian MacKay, that would be the vibe where I'd just be like, okay, you're a little bit more serious about everything than I can handle, and I don't know what to do now.
I think that is a wise observation. Is Ian does kind of project that Buddha type aesthetic, if you will. Adam, you're getting reincarnated, and you have to be Ian, you have to be Keith, or you have to be Jello. Who do you pick?
Ian.
Well, all right. So I feel that like I will.
Easy for me.
Go ahead, Tom. Who do you pick?
Well, the fact of the matter is, Keith Morris is an amazing artist, but he's never had any kind of what you would call economic security. And he's been very forthcoming about that. So the other two are on the opposite end of the spectrum in that they managed to live punk rock lifestyles, but also haven't had to couch surf. for extended periods of time. And at that point, if I had to narrow it down from those two, I simply go with Jell-O because of the better weather in San Francisco than Washington.
I don't feel like,
so that's my very logical, that's my very logical, like, middle-aged dad.
I mean, yeah, I feel, I guess I'm going to, I mean, I don't want to have to be Jell-O from the Dead Kennedys lawsuit era, because that feels exhausting. But on the other hand, I don't feel like being Ian MacKay wouldn't really be a lot of fun sometimes.
Well, it's, he doesn't project, you know, because fun. If somebody said, I'm going to deliver the vinyl catalog of one or the other of Discord or, you know, Alternative Tentacles. Well, now I'm rethinking, because Alternative Tentacles, I think, has a lot more releases. But I would say overall, I would take the Discord catalog. I can't imagine the last time Discord put a record I gave a crap about, though.
See, I'm picking. I want to say Keith, but I can't, because he always seems agitated and angry, which is what I love about him. But I don't know if I'd want to be that person.
Yeah,
you know,
it's entertaining, but not to.
So that leaves Jell-O or Ian. And honestly, Ian's life has been way more stable than Jell-O. And Jell-O's talked about how he had depression. Ian hasn't. Maybe he has. But I think Ian's life is pretty well put together. But that being said, it never really feels like Ian's having fun. You know, where Jell-O, there's definitely times where he's having fun. Like, if you live in San Francisco, like, you'll go to a show and he'll just jump up on stage and start singing with the band. You know, and also, Jell-O's kind of got more of the Don thing going, where, you know, where Ian's like, you know, I'm just another guy on Discord, where Jell-O's like, yeah, I'm Jell-O Biafra. So
it's true. He's not jumping up on stage with some crappy band to sing, you know, Big Man, Small Mouth.
Despite the depression and despite the breakdown in some social relationship that Jell-O has had, that maybe Ian has had too, I don't know. I think I'm picking Jell-O because, A, the Alternative Technical Catalog, I like Discord. And honestly, there's probably more bad records on AT than Discord. But I think there's more amazing records on AT than there is in Discord. And it seems that Jell-O's probably got a better record collection. And it just seems like he's having more fun.
Let me throw one more thing in the equation. It's when, at least when Jell-O was a younger band, he's in his 60s now. I don't know what his current relationship status is, but I know he was not afraid to enjoy the pleasures of the flesh. And it seems like Ian MacKay was a little more reticent about that.
Could you have said that in a more creepy way?
So, Adam, what's your pick?
You heard it here first. Jell-O has a woman tied up in his closet right now.
I'm entertained by Keith, but I wouldn't pick Keith for the reasons stated. I guess I'd go Jell-O. I'm too much of a. I feel that I would probably be more into some of the things that are in the Discord catalog than in the AT catalog. So if we're looking at it from a musical standpoint, I might gravitate more that way. But if we're just looking at who's probably having more fun on a day-to-day basis, I sort of imagine that's Jell-O. So, you know, I'm going to go with that. I mean, man, I don't want to cast any shade in Ian MacKay. I love the guy, but let's he lives a very serious existence. And if I'm going to die and then come back to life as something, I kind of don't want to have to come back to life and be really strident about stuff.
And I hate to bring up the obvious, but none of those guys are dead yet.
Well, if you come back as them, then you have to kill the original one. That's
because Adam, I've heard you also enjoy Pledges of the Flesh.
Yeah, but I really think we draw out the S like the flesh.
What do you think we were talking about before you came on, John? Only thing gets smoked. You know what I'm talking about?
We've got some good mail. We'll read next week. You can always use at podcast@punknews.org. And listen, have some fun with the flesh, and we'll see you next week.